Good morning.
Good morning.
We start our second day, and we are going to start off with
research.
Okay, Alan.
Thank you. You've probably guessed that I'm not going to go slowly through my slides. I think there are 45, and the idea of this is an introductory session, and mainly an opportunity for you to ask questions about the program overall. What I thought I'd do is just highlight a few issues around the research program and some of the projects, and highlighting particularly the interactions we have with the national standard setters, both the ones in ISAF and the ones beyond that as well. And there have been things have moved on since we posted this paper about a month ago, I think it was, roughly. It was one of the earlier ones, I think. We've got some new staff who've come into the Disclosure Initiative program. Let's step back a little bit. The research program itself, I'm not going to go through the changes in the standard setting process. I think everybody's familiar with that. We've now moved to a model where we're going to be investing a little bit more in the front end of the standard setting process. Perhaps if you turn to slide 10, I always say, you know, it's always nice to have a solution, but you can projects that haven't been completed on time or as anticipated, and everyone knows, you know, if you did an adverse and favourable variance analysis on our time, there wouldn't be very many favourable variances. I'm told there's one where something came in ahead of the target, and to be honest, I don't think our constituents would appreciate that anyway, because that would mean that we're catching them by surprise. So it's a very hard process, but we've tended to push out, and we know that we've taken a lot longer on projects than we've ever anticipated. So the idea of this is to try and invest more time up front in defining the problem that we're trying to solve, make sure we all understand what the financial reporting issue is, and then see if we can identify a cost-beneficial solution to solve that problem. So for many, when they look at this, it feels a bit bureaucratic. Some of the feedback I've had is there's another layer going into here. It's not supposed to be that. I think if we get this right, we'll actually get our standards out more quickly because we'll have invested a little bit more up front in defining the problem. And then we can move far more quickly to a solution. So that's the idea. The other thing that I like to emphasise is the and again, you get mixed signals about this, but I see the research program as a bit like a safe harbour. I think historically there's been a situation where you say you're going to develop a project and we'll have a look at an issue. There's a perception that once it's on that treadmill, we're just going to be determined to go on and get the thing finished. You know, I know we suspended some projects in about 2010 to focus on some shared projects with the FASB, but typically it looks like we start, we're determined to get to an end. Whereas in a research phase, we can look at some issues in a relatively safe harbour. And I think the example yesterday with equity method is one where we're not quite sure. There are at least two issues there. One is some pragmatic or practical application issues with equity method, and the other one is a more fundamental. You know, it was brought in and historically as a one-way consolidation because of concerns about fair value and all sorts of things. Maybe it's a chance to step back and have a look at that. So that's, we can do that in a relatively safe environment without necessarily committing to making changes. So we want to identify what the problems are. As I said yesterday, whether or not the cure is better than the problem at the moment, or whether you're better off sticking with the current accounting. The other thing too is by setting out a reasonably clear program, we're trying to make sure that we can tap into, make advantage of limited resources. We can't do everything ourselves. So setting up a program and cutting it down into smaller pieces, which I'll mention soon, that gets other standard setters involved, for example. So we have clear, well-defined projects that other standard setters will contribute towards. But I'll come back to that in the back end of this. So we flick through to page 13. I'm going to talk about the projects in a second, but the other thing is the outputs from this is that typically if you go back to the old days, we haven't had many have been through this full process. Revenue is actually a good example, one that's been through discussion paper, exposure draft, and then final. I think we'll see some slightly different outputs coming out. and one in particular is the disclosure initiative. When we had the agenda consultation and feedback statement, we then identified that having a discussion forum, a public forum on disclosure that might be helpful. We did that, and then we produced a report from that and put that into public space. So sometimes I think at some of the outputs there will be position papers and won't necessarily have a public comment period associated with them. Mm-hmm. They will be there so people can comment if they choose to, but they're there to stimulate debate or at least show rule a line to show what the board's got to so far as it's continuing on its discussions. And I think you might see that with materiality as well. We have planned on the disclosure initiative to have a paper in front of our board by September. And depending on the discussions there, we might then put out a position paper outlining what the board understands about materiality internationally. Not necessarily asking for feedback on that, but that's, it'll be an input into our perhaps some standard setting activity. If you have a look at page 15, I've identified there are 13 projects. It sounds like a big list, and it is. Probably the most important issue for our board is identifying priorities. During the agenda consultation, people said to us consistently the main thing was explaining clearly why it was you were putting one project ahead of another. It was up to the board to decide what its priorities ought to be, and what people wanted more than anything else was just understanding why those projects were presented in that particular order. We've got at the IFRS Advisory Council, we have a session scheduled there to look at the research program and the projects, and we'll be asking for their feedback on setting priorities. And then we have a session in June for our board to have a look at priority setting as well. If you have a look at our due process handbook about how to put items onto the agenda, it's both helpful and unhelpful. It's designed not to be that specific. Have you actually got a problem? How broad is the problem? How deep is the problem? Can you find a cost-beneficial solution? And I think in all of the issues on the research project list here, we can justify having them on the research program. The question that I think our board is starting to address now is which ones will we push faster? My personal view is that the best way to think about these is in at least three layers, and that's probably as fine as we need to go. Those that we should be giving high priority to now, those that are medium term, and those that are longer term. And both through availability of staff and just the sheer size of them, you've identified that I've categorised four of them as being longer term, unless we want to take on the whole of the replacement of income taxes today. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're looking at, and I'd be interested in any feedback you have today on the priority setting. But the type of thing that drives it is for discount rates, for example. During the feedback and the agenda consultation, got a lot of feedback. People said there is a problem. Well, we don't know. It makes it very hard then to set priorities because you're not quite sure what problem you're dealing with. But that's the nature of this program, is that sometimes you need to take a few steps forward to understand the problem, to work out how much priority to give it. At the moment then, because there was a lot of perception about discount rates, people say they're inconsistently used, different objectives and so on, we're documenting all the cases in IFRS, and I think that's coming back in the next ASAP meeting, is that right, Michelle?
Yes.
Yeah, it's planned to come back. Our board's looking at that next month as well, so we're starting to have a look and understand the problem with the discount rates. It's not necessarily looking back more fundamentally about what is the right discount rate to use, but documenting and understanding whether we have inconsistencies in terminology or objectives, or where they have similar objectives but different ways of measuring the discount rate. And you'll see the equity method, and as I mentioned, in a way there are two problems there. One is the simple, shorter term pragmatic application issues, and the other is the more fundamental. So again, it can be difficult sometimes documenting and setting priorities until you've done a little bit of enough of work to work out what the problem is you're trying to address. On the other hand, BizCom under common control, which we're doing in about 10 or 15 minutes, we've been asked by IOSCO to address a specific issue. And when IOSCO, collectively all the securities regulators, ask us to address something, then you have a look at that and take that seriously. So that's something where one of the reasons we've accelerated that a bit. So I'm not going to go through the projects. You've got a bit of a a summary of each of the projects here. One of the things that we've struggled with is to update all of our website at the same time to try and get this out there. So one of the issues we've got is communication. There is work going on, not necessarily behind the scenes, but the nature of research is that you're investing quietly in building, and it's important for us to communicate what we're doing and how we're setting those priorities. Last thing I want to touch on and then open for questions is just the role of national standard setters. Historically, we've worked collaboratively with other standard setters on projects. We have with the Canadians on conceptual framework and measurement. I could go through a list, but I'll leave somebody off and end up offending somebody, I hope. But that's just one example. We've had people working in the past. We've been taking this a little bit slowly because there are two things we want to do. One is we have to be ready to receive any work that people do. And it's very embarrassing for us, I think, when we ask somebody to do something, they deliver, and then we aren't ready to deal with it. And we've had a couple of experiences of that historically. So it's very important to us that we have a staff member in place who coordinates, liaises with the standard setter, so they work collaboratively together on that. The other thing is that historically we've often taken rather big projects. You know, it's Australia, Kevin will have to help me. It's Australia, on extractives, Australia, South Africa, Canada, and Norway.
One of the Scandinavian.
One is, yeah, Norway, I think. Work together. Now, extractives is a big project. And we've had, you know, management commentary with the New Zealanders and the Canadians, UK and Germany. A lot of these things are big things we've asked people to do. Measurement, you know, measurement's a big topic in Canada. If anything on these, we're trying to get down into smaller manageable sizes. So for the disclosure initiative, we've got the UK FRC is doing some work and helping input to that project. And we've had discussions, we're going to get the timing right so that will feed into our discussion paper. The Italian standard setter in the last week has agreed to do some work on accounting policies versus estimate changes and the way you disclose those, so it's some background work on ISA. And we're talking to some other standard setters about some smaller pieces like that. They're not that small, but they're manageable and deliverable. And so I've identified on here a list, and I know that last time I published a list like this, I had an email within hours of the public of it being posted. Try and add extra names in here, but we're keen to talk to the national standard setters about work on other projects. I've got a call on Thursday morning with one, and I've got a meeting today with another one, so it's very important that if you're interested in working on projects that we can try and work collaboratively on those. And I'll just wrap up. The thing I find interesting is, I'll just cover the last little piece on this about evidence-supported standard setting. I'm hearing more and more in these sessions about academic research that people are looking at and using to support some of their work and analysis. And so we've had some initiatives to try and encourage and draw on that network a lot more. About a month ago, we launched a thing called a Research Centre, which is our web-based research centre, and it's appealing to academics in particular. It's we're not turning ourselves into a university, but what we're saying is that if you're going to be doing some research, we can signal the types of projects and analysis we're interested in getting some feedback on. And I, you know, say to people, like, if you think about revenue recognition, we'll have to do a post-implementation review in about 2021, something like that, 2022. So we can tell academics that's when we'll be doing the review. So if they're looking to do research, that might be something worthwhile doing. And as well as that, we've got a forum in October, I think the 2nd of October, up at Oxford University. That's run in conjunction with ABR, Accounting and Business Research, a special issue on conceptual framework. And it's time to follow, I think it's the IFAS, I think it's ASAF, well, the acronym's ASAF on the Thursday, Friday, the World Standard Setters Monday, Tuesday morning, and with an overlap with IFAS Tuesday, Wednesday, and then the forums on Thursday. At Oxford, and that's it's an academic versus and the standard setters working together. So, very brief overview of a big pack. Are there any questions at all?
So, because you said
some questions, didn't I? Yeah.
On page 16, how does the PIR process work into the research process? And the reason I'm asking is we've deferred our making improvements to business combinations pending your, so we can, since we're converged, we have the opportunity to stay converged. But I just wondered how the PIR ties into your research agenda, if at all.
Two, when you do a review, I think three things would come out of it, post-implementation review. And in terms of scale, I guess, you might find a few small bits and pieces, and I would call those narrow scope or maintenance issues. And in operating segments, for example, we found a few little things, definition of a chief operating decision maker. We'd have a look to see whether or not we should do some maintenance on those things, and if it's a standard that's converged, we liaise with you on that. If it's a major thing, then the post-implementation review does not automatically cause change. We'd actually have to step back and say, look, it's not achieved its objectives. But then, you know, you look at the list, we've got a whole lot of other issues that people are telling us are a problem. Do we want to go through the pain of going back and revising that fundamentally, or do we consider that in the light of other priorities? So we'd have to think more carefully about that as an input. Post-implementation review would be an input to work out whether we need to do more on that.
But it's possible to do it the other way around. If your research base is gathering data over time, you can get ahead of PIR and you've got something to work with.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to know the incidence of things as much as anything.
Yeah.
So once you get the issues, you want to relate it to the incidence.
Yeah.
Liesl?
You, I think, haven't mentioned is the link to the agenda consultation, because somehow as we're going into the next agenda consultation, so what's the decision process on the agenda consultation versus this one? Sort of where does the ISB on its own set its priorities? It's not that I fear anything, it's just that I think it could do with a bit of clarification. Because if you now set all this up, we would say then we don't need to comment on the research agenda once you come up with the agenda consultation, because you've set it all up already.
The inaugural agenda consultation, I think, was unique, because at that stage we'd come out of a program of converged work and we're looking at a cleaner sheet of paper, so we're looking for guidance on the priorities. Having done that, my view is that we don't then want to basically take another blank sheet of paper every 3 years and throw everything out and look. This is about, I use analogies all the time, once the ship sailed and you're actually on there, you're looking to make adjustments to it. Because you might, where the input's helpful is that you might look at that research project list and say, you know what, don't worry about that. Don't do any work on it, just take that off, or we don't think it's productive. Or people might say, well, we actually think you should accelerate some work on that. So it's input into the priority process and help us realign. The agenda consultation is supposed to be generally strategic in nature. The other thing, though, is that the agenda consultation is not the only point at which projects should come in. And this is an issue that our own board, I think, struggles with sometimes. I think if you identify you've actually got a problem that needs fixing, that's why we introduce the maintenance aspect our due process. So because theoretically, under our old due process, even to make a tiny tweak, you had to get permission, in a sense, or consult with the advisory council. So maintenance is sort of ongoing. If a major issue comes along, we don't have to wait 3 years to add that on, but we do consult with the advisory council and with ASAF and other bodies at the time.
Hans?
Well, I think first of all, for clarification, this morning I'm wearing the hat of the acting director of research of EFRAG, so it's got nothing to do with insurance. I have a question or a comment on income tax. It's classified as long-term, and if I look at slide 33, it focuses on a fundamental review and not yet started, no staff allocated yet. EFRAC and its partners, in particular FSC, did some work about a year and a half ago, where our conclusion, also based on input from our constituents, was that there was not that much fundamentally broken in IS 12, but there were a number of areas for short-term improvement. So my question is, this split seems to be pretty black and white. There could be elements in the longer-term projects which are eligible for short-term improvements. So my question is, have you considered such split?
Yes, I guess we have, because The reason we classified that as a longer term project is that we had tried to make some short term improvements to that and working with the FASB, and ended up not finishing that aspect of it, because we felt, my understanding is that at the time they decided that they weren't necessarily going to be good short term improvements. So we ended up not being able to complete that part of the project. So when you've got a failure to complete a whole lot of what you think are narrow scope improvements, plus you've got issues coming to IFRIC that you're finding difficult to resolve, that was the signal for us to step back and have a little bit and have a look more fundamentally at it. So it doesn't mean that we wouldn't, it's a bit like equity method again, it might be that you take a step back to look more fundamentally, but you then identify some short-term things you can do. Or you look back and say, no, something, we need to do something more fundamental about this.
Kevin?
I really strongly support the initiative. I think it's really important that we develop this, and it's going to take some time, I think, to get it to a level where it's as good as it could be. There are a couple of cautions I would express. I think you should have to defend your topic, like a PhD topic. You need to defend the topic at the very beginning. Not just talk to people about it, but really say, okay, this is the topic, this is what we understand the topic to be, and give people a chance to hammer it, whether that's a legitimate topic. Because it does worry me that some of the ones I see listed here, I'm really struggling to see why they're listed or even what would be involved in them. But you've already gone through a mental process of listing them, so you've got some idea in your head, but I can't respond to you. I'd like you to have to defend your topic. And if we're all happy that you've defended the topic, this isn't the answer, it's the topic, then I think we're better placed. I would caution against bias in self-selecting contractors. We'll put our hands up for the things we're interested in, but we'll bring our biases when we do. And I think you've got to be very careful that you don't end up with the noisy wheels doing the work that other people wouldn't agree with. And we're all guilty of some sort of bias. My sense was volume is too great, too many topics. And when you say it's a safe harbour, so I understand that means there's a little bit of freedom to explore things to some degree. But bear in mind, we're all devoting resources to whatever projects you're doing, and that's very consumptive of time. So I think related to the volume, we've got to make sure that it is a genuine topic to have a crack at. On priorities, I think something that none of us have ever done well is strategic planning technically. And by that I really mean having as clear a mind as we can of what the fundamental issues we're trying to get to are and how they link to one another. We tend to just go topic by topic depending on how important it seems. So getting the technical interlinkages, so that you do it in the right sequence, I think could pay off big time, because you might get the foundations done and find you don't need the rest, or that it covers other topics as well. But I think it's a great idea.
Alexander?
It's really something for you to think about, because being a former academic myself, there was always a strong debate in academia about the use of academic research to standard setting. And there are thousands of papers written about that. And there is strong criticism that for methodological reasons, academics have to cut. Any methodological approach has to cut a specific part of environment. For example, a stock price reaction to disclosure of accounting information, which is much narrower than what standard setters should consider when issuing a standard. So when I think of a standard setting doing research to help his activities, it's something that must be, methodological problems must be taken into account quite seriously, because depending on the way you choose your methodology, you can get completely different results about any topic on financial reporting. So, and I can give you a few examples about like fair value estimation, is it good or bad? It depends on if you consider the stock price reaction to it is it seems to be quite associated. Is if you do laboratory experiments about how people understand fair value estimates, then you get the opposite result. So it's and in academia, that's okay. You can have absolutely divergent results depending on the methodology. But I think on how that will work as input here, and how can you translate the complexity of study setting into your research process, because it's quite hard to design a research project to help you standard set the sense of, can you take into account all the different interests, all the different aspects, which methodology is appropriate for that? So I'm quite interested to see a project being done, to see how you're going to incorporate it.
Just respond to that quickly. We are quite aware of the different incentives and the different approaches that empirical academic research and qualitative research that they undertake has relative to a standard setter, for example. What we're trying to do is more evidence-based, so that when we actually are making decisions based on the models that we use here as standard setters, that we've got some empirical support for that underneath as well. I'm quite encouraged by some of the changes that I'm seeing in academic research that's trying to get more focused, I think, on helping support the decision making that we have to make as standard setters. So, perhaps offline we have a discussion about it, but we've got some of the parts of the initiative are trying to encourage some changes in the way people do research. Not completely, but we know the limitations, and we're not relying on research as driving us to a solution, but it's there to help support our decision making.
Roger?
Well, I think it's a very good paper, and I very much welcome the initiative. I think when the discussion paper comes out, I think it would be helpful if, where possible, it gives alternatives, because I think it can take extra time if this is one suggestion, and then for whatever reason, people find problems with it. We're then into finding the next solution, and I think identifying options is the way around that. Perhaps at a more high level than you're going to have the one solution, but at least people can then give their high level reactions to it.
Yeah.
Linda, you want to go here?
Just a quick comment. So we are very supportive of this. In particular, we actually had this paper discussed. We distributed it to our board for our May meeting, and we looked at this paper. We particularly resonated with the notion on slide 8 around evidence-supported decision-making, because one of the things that we're struggling with now, and it not only goes beyond our board, but we're also dealing with our colleagues on the Public Sector Accounting Board in Canada, we wish that we had more data. We find ourselves midstream in some standard setting process, and we wish that we had more data. So we're very, very supportive of this, and we're supportive, we look forward to participating in the activities. I think the important thing to do is to figure out where we can best support, including there is work being done on all of these topics. It's clearly that people go out there and they do work because they need to do work to make decisions, preparers do it, whatever. But if we can harness that work already that's being done and then connect it in the right way, we think that there is a way to move things forward. So we just want to let you know how supportive we are of the initiative.
Okay, thank you very much, Alan. Then we continue with our next talk.